Today's shiur is entitled, The Jewish Dietary Laws, Temporary or Forever, where Judaism differed. It relates both to the Parsha of Shmini, and also it can be related to that of Re'eh. The commentary Philo makes the following statement. In his special laws, chapter 4, numbers 100 to 101, he says that all of the animals of land, sea, or air, which have the finest and fattest meat, Moshe Rabbeinu sternly forbade, knowing that they set a trap for the most slavish of senses, for the taste, for the smell, and they produce gluttony, an evil very dangerous both to the soul and the body. Now among the different kinds of land animals, there is none whose flesh is so delicious as the pigs, as all who eat it agree. We all know that when it comes to the Jewish dietary laws, there are many things that are forbidden, but it seems that throughout the world, we are most well known for having the prohibition of the pig. And as Philo points out, apparently, the pig is something which is very desirous in terms of its taste. And in order to help us, as we know other Mefarshim comment, to control our appetites, it would be understood then if this is the most attractive of the flesh for one to consume, that it should be forbidden so we should be able to control our appetites. But I have good news for both sides. There are numerous sources, and this is brought up in various discussions of the topic, in both Rav Blum's Torah Ladat, and also in the Imre Shammai of Rav Shammai Rubinstein. In the future, La'atid Lavo, pork will in fact be permitted. Many Mefarshim bring a midrash that says, Lama nikra shemo chazir, why is the pig called in Hebrew the chazir? She'atid HaKadosh Baruch Hu lahachziro eleinu. For in the future, the Ribono Shel Olam will return what is now forbidden, the pig, for us to consume, to our diet. We will be able to eat pig in the future. This is brought down in the name of some in Medrash Tanchuma. Again, many other Mefarshim bring it down. But obviously, a certain question must arise in our minds as a result of this statement. This flies against the Ikrei Emuna, the basic fundamentals as put down by the Rambam, and as we know Jewish tradition adheres to. The Torah we know is Leolam. It is forever with its laws, without any changes, without any additions, without any subtractions. Anyone who does not believe that is an apikoros, is a heretic. And yet, we have a statement here that says, and a chazal, interestingly, and many who go with this chazal, that indicates that there will be changes, certainly at least in terms of this particular item of the pig, and there are other midrashim that suggest that it could be other animals as well that are forbidden to us, that they will become permitted la'atid lavo in the future. How does one answer this incredible kasha that these midrashim, these sources, create for us? The Orach Chaim HaKadosh on this parsha, sensing, no doubt, this problem, indicates that it's not that the Torah is going to change, chas v'shalom, but rather it is the pig, as we are looking at that example, that will change. The pig, which now does not fully conform to the Jewish dietary laws in terms of it really being a creature that chews its cud, that animal in the future will then undergo a change where it will conform to our dietary requirements, and thereby it will be able to be consumed. It's not because the Torah is going to change, but the pig is in fact going to change. There are others who provide answers to this perplexing question as well. The Pardes Yosef says, and in the name of others also, that as we know, the Gemara in Chulin says, Daf Kuftet Amudbet, Koma Da'asr Shari Kenegda, whatever the Torah forbid, it permitted us the taste of that item, so we would not miss out on getting benefit from it in this world. And so for example, it gives Asurlan Chazir, Sharalan Shibuta, that the Torah we know forbid us the pig, but it permitted us the Shibuta, a certain type of fish that tastes like the pig tastes. The only thing is, we no longer know what this particular fish is. So thereby suggest the Pardes Yosef that in the future, when that Midrash said that we'll be able to eat pig, it did not mean literally we're going to eat the pig. How could that be? The Torah forbids eating a pig and the Torah is forever. Rather, it means that it will then be revealed to us once again, this fish, the Shibuta, we will be able to enjoy it, and consequently, we will thereby know, once again, the taste of pig, what it tastes like, this wondrous taste, as presented, we said, by Philo. Yet another answer that is suggested is given by the Baalei Kabbalah, who also, as we understand, were not willing to accept the idea that the pig could be permitted in the future. According to this view, there is up in the heavens a Tsar, a certain governing force, Ushemo Chazriel, and its name is Chazriel. Behu kati gor al Yisrael, v'yatid HaKadosh Baruch Hu lachzir al Yisrael, liyot lahem l'sanigor. This force, this prosecuting force in the cosmos upon Klal Yisrael, known as Chazriel, that force, which is now a force that attacks Klal Yisrael, will in the future be a force that is defending of Klal Yisrael. That is what it means on the deeper level, according to the Derech HaSod. In no way does it mean that there is going to be an ability for one to eat pork. It is not only the notion of pig being permitted that one can find proof for with reference to changes being made in the Torah in the future. There's a famous medrash in Mishlei, Parshatet, which says, Kol ha-moadim batalim, v'yemei ha-purim lo yu batalim. In the future, all of the holidays will in fact be wiped out, and the days of Purim, however, will not be wiped out. Shenemar, it says at the end of Megillas Esther, Vimea Purim lo yavru, it says that the days of Purim shall not pass away from their observance by the Jewish people. There are other sources in that medrash which indicate perhaps Yom Kippur will also continue to be. It says, Vaitazo Bachem Luchukat Olam. This is the view of Rebbe. But again, focusing upon just this thought that the holidays themselves will no longer be existent in the future, in the Messianic age. Again, very difficult in terms of the Torah being forever. It is true, I have seen those who want to suggest that just like we have a notion in Kashrus of batal b'shishim, of something being batal, but it still exists. So too, it means in the Messianic age that those holidays will be batal. They will still be there, but they will not be as intensely felt and experienced as they are today. But Pashtut, it seems to say that in the Messianic age, that these holidays will no longer be observed. somewhat recalling to our minds perhaps a famous statement about Yetzias Mitzrayim. We know also that there are statements that in the future, that in comparison to the great redemption that will occur to the entire world, that we will no longer have the memory of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Again, there are those who say it doesn't mean that Yetzias Mitzrayim will not exist, and the memory of Yetzias Mitzrayim to the holiday of Pesach and the Halachas, but that in comparison to the universal redemption that will occur, the redemption of Klal Yisrael from Mitzrayim will no longer be seen as being as significant as it is today. But still, this idea even of holidays not existing in the future, again, seems to be a major kasha upon the idea that the Torah does not change, that nothing is going to be subtracted from the Torah. That's one of the Ikrei Emunah. If one, in fact, looks at the Rambam is to be found in Hilchot Megillah, Perek Bet, Halacha Yud Chet, the very final halacha in that section. The Rambam makes the statement a little differently. He does not say all the holidays will be wiped out and Purim will not. He says, Kol Sifrei HaNevi'im V'chol HaKtuvim Atidim Libatel Limot HaMashiach. He says that all of the prophetic works and the writings of Tanakh will be batel, will be canceled out, as it were, in the Messianic Age, chutz mimegilat Esther, except for Megillat Esther, which will still retain the same value as it does today. V'harehi kayemet kichamisha chumshei Torah. And he says that the Megillat Esther will continue to exist like the Chumash, ukehilchot hilchot shel Torah shebal peh, and like the laws of the Oral Torah, she'einam betelim leolam, which can never be wiped out. How fascinating. The Rambam, in his utilization of that very medrash, which would have seemed to be akasha upon the fact that things are going to be wiped out in the future, namely the holidays, the Rambam uses that medrash to indicate, in fact, as he just said, that nothing can ever be wiped out from the Torah. As we all know, as he's indicated, it's one of the Ikrei Emunah. And therefore, he says that it means the Nevi'im and Ksuvim will no longer have their import in Yimot HaMashiach. It does not mean, however, the holidays in Chumash and all of the mitzvahs of the Torah and all the Torah Sheba'al Peh from Sinai, everything that came from that source will no longer be relevant. Chas v'shalom. Now, where does the Rambam get such a right to change the Medrash that we saw in Mishlei in order to suit his needs? Ah, so in the Yerushalmi Megillah, Perek Aleph, Halacha Hey, so there Rabbi Yochanan says, HaNevim Vaktuvim Matidim Libatel, V'chameshet Sifrei Torah Einam Matidim Libatel. Ah, this is the source of the Rambam. The Rambam sources that it says there that specifically that the Chumash will never be wiped out in any way. And it goes on to say that also Megillat Esther, Eina v'halachot, Eina natin libatel. So to Megillat Esther and her relevant laws also will not be wiped out. But not, the thought is not that the holidays will be wiped out. The Rambam says that's impossible. Perhaps the significance of the Nevi'im and the Ksuvim, since everyone will be on a higher level, they will not need rebuke, perhaps they will not need the inspiration of the Ksuvim, the rebuke of the Nevi'im, and therefore, that's what it means. We will not turn to those sources as the critical sources that they are today, but the notion that there would be holidays, mitzvahs in the Torah, that are wiped out, the Rambam clearly says, is untenable, is unacceptable. And again, we see, therefore, it's clear that according to the Rambam, as he has no statement of it, and it would have certainly make sense, therefore, that the Rambam would not allow a notion of pig being permitted in the Messianic Age, La'atid Lavo. I might add as well, before we go on, that in the writings of the Maritzchayot, this is on Daf Ayin Hey, so there he has a discussion about this matter, and he says, "V'hine, Anochi lo matzati divarim halalu b'midrash." Commenting upon this idea that pig will be permitted in the future, despite many mefarshim who, as I said, you can look in the Torah Ladat and the Imre Shammai, and you will see that there are various sources that are quoted for this idea. Nonetheless, the Maritzayot said that he searched and he has found no such medrash, which indicates this will happen in the future, again, supporting the notion that, according to this perspective we're presenting now, in no way could it be understood that pig would actually be permitted in the future as it goes against the Ikre Emunah. I would like to suggest a thought, as we saw some of the others did, in order to understand how it could be, on the one hand, that in the future pork will be permitted, according to that view, and yet it will not violate this thought that the Torah is forever without any change. And in order to do that, I would like to consider, in a broad sense, the significance of the dietary laws, the laws of kashrut, according to the Torah, according to Jewish tradition, and where they differed from the views, as we shall see, of other religions of the time. There are many scholars who suggest, and one can look in the Chama Leibowitz in her fourth essay on Shemini for a discussion of these elements, that there is nothing unusual in these regulations, the dietary laws, because they were widespread in the ancient world. There were unclean animals, and there were clean animals. There were animals that generated impurity, and animals that didn't generate impurity. Now, I know this may be difficult for many, the idea that how could this be? We know that the idea of kashrut is so, we always have believed, unique to Judaism, as it says at the end of the Parsha, that this is being done, lahavdil, to make a distinction between the Jewish people and Kedusha, and between the other nations who are not concerned with Kedusha. So how could it be then that other nations had such dietary laws as well? Rav David Zvi Hoffman, in his introduction to the commentary in Vayikra, the beautiful work of Rav David Zvi Hoffman, there he discusses this matter. Rav Hoffman, we know, who was called upon in his time, as others were as well, who wrote commentaries on Chumash, like the Ksava Kabbalah, the Meshech Chochma of Shimshon Kol Hirsch, and others, the Malbim at the time, who wrote commentaries on Chumash, and that's why, of course, we had so many writings at the time. Haimek Davar. They were all living at a time when there were attacks upon the biblical text, and that there were statements being made that whatever was in Chumash that was meaningful was borrowed from the pagans, and there was nothing new to be contributed from the Bible. Rav Hoffman, in this particular case, addressing that, says that while it is true that there are modern scholars that maintain that the dietary laws could be found among other peoples of the time, they were not unique to the Jewish people, and they claim that they were even borrowed from those nations, so that the Jewish people just copied them, just plagiarized them. This has specifically been put forth, he says, through the religion of Zoroastrianism. We know that the Zoroastric religion believed in a God of light and good, and a God of darkness and evil. And that's how it explained, in fact, the presence of good in the world and the presence of evil in the world. We have a much more difficult time, we who are Jews. We have to explain that somehow evil comes from a good God, which is not necessarily an easy thing to explain. And yet, the Zoroastrians and others had an easy answer to the problem of evil in the world. It doesn't come from the good God. It comes from the evil God. So too, says Rav Hoffman, can the distinction in the dietary laws in Jewish tradition be made from those of other ancient traditions by this thought. The Zoroastrians believed that the foods that were permitted to be consumed were created by the good God, and the foods that were unclean and abominable and impure, they were created by the evil God. Judaism, obviously, first of all, he says, does not have this thought. But more than this, says Rav David Tzvi Hoffman, he says, where in the Torah the idea is that these items that are put forth in the dietary laws that are forbidden to be eaten are only forbidden to be eaten, and they have a certain status given to them. They're impure, they're off limits to a certain degree. But according to Zoroastrianism, the animals that are deemed impure are seen as enemies of the deity, of the good deity. And thereby they are to be hunted down. They have to be destroyed. And only the clean ones are to be protected. In other words, according to Zoroastrianism and these other pagan religions of the time and dietary laws, there is something inherent, ontological, within the animal, the creature itself, which is destructive in nature, which is abominable, which is impure. It's part of the biology of the animal. It's part of the animal in its essence. Where according to Jewish tradition, it is nothing of the sort. The animals that are impure are simply so because God made them impure. Oh, I don't mean that there may not be reasons as well why we should not consume them. As the Rambam says in the Mor Nevuchim, in the third book, chapter 48, he believed that there were health elements that were considered in God's setting up of the dietary laws. But in terms of there being impurity, destructiveness, something in the essence of the animal related not to man, as even the Rambam says, by the dietary aspect of being healthy, but related to God in terms of the impurity and the destructive nature of these creatures, there we never had such an idea of the pagans that these elements in fact create a battle against the God himself. For those who know, this makes imminent sense concerning the notion of paganism in general. Their main notion in terms of the gods, many have written, is that the gods are not separate from the drama of life in this world, but they are in fact very much in the midst of it and immersed in it, and they cannot escape from it. Just like a human being cannot escape from it. So if there are forces of destruction and of evil in the world, the gods themselves are embattled with those forces and risk being destroyed by them. That's why you had the notion of the temple and the sacrifices and the libations being offered to the gods of old, to the idolaters' gods, who believed that the temple was in fact the home of the God. You fed him with the sacrifices. You gave him drink with the libations. And if you could destroy the temple, the home of the God, you would destroy the God, because the God lived there in the temple. We know from our tradition, V'yasuli mikdash v'shachanti b'tocham, that God did not live within the mikdash. By building a mikdash that was being done for us, so God could dwell among us. And neither was God confined to any home or to any world. And God was above all of these issues of the battles that took place between good and evil, these so-called battles as the pagans described them. But according to them, going also to the notion of the dietary laws, you had the idea of the gods themselves having to deal with the destruction and even evil nature of these very creatures that were something that would come against them, which could lead to their being wiped out. And consequently, these elements, from the religious perspective, were forbidden to be consumed, and moreover, as we said, had to be destroyed, which was not a notion in Jewish tradition. Nachama Leibowitz brings down as well that other modern scholars, such as Yechezkel Kaufman in his famous The Religion of Israel, also indicates that the uncleanliness of the dietary elements in the Torah is not a power. It doesn't have any ability, some magical ability, to some destructive ability. It is purely, he says, a state, a certain status, a religious aesthetic situation, as he calls it. Something deemed by God in order, as some midrashim I saw say, to in a sense test us to see will we follow what he says or not. But certainly, such elements, such food, such animals, do not constitute a threat to God himself, who is totally independent of these creatures, and above them, and not in fear of them. The all-important achievement of Judaism, Eckhart Kaufman says, was the abrogation of the belief of the unclean domain of the Zoroastrians. With getting rid of this belief and that these elements had powers of evil, this helped push forth as well the idea of the independent God that Judaism brought to the world and which differed it from all aspects of pagan belief. With this now understood, I would like to suggest an answer to our query of how it could be that pork would be permitted in the world to come, that the pig would be able to be consumed, even though our tradition says that nothing will be changed in terms of halacha in the world to come, and nothing will be added or subtracted from the Torah in the Messianic age. I would like to suggest that just as we saw that the Jewish dietary laws in general express the view that there is nothing inherent that is evil or destructive in these animals, in an animal such as the pig, that this is in fact is what we are being told by this Mamar Chazal. When it says that we will once again consume pig in the future, this does not mean literally necessarily we're going to consume pig. That's not what it means. Again, that would go against the basic understanding of the Torah changing. It's not supposed to change. It doesn't mean that. It means that in the future, God could permit pig to be consumed. Where the pagans would say, there is no way that that pig could be consumed, lati lavo. There's something dangerous in that food, in that pig. There's something evil in it. There's something destructive in it. You cannot consume it. You yourself will be affected by it. You will be diseased by it. You will die from it. It is a danger to the deity. No. This statement is saying, in order that we should understand fully the nature of the Jewish dietary code, that in the future, these things that are forbidden to us now, the pig as an example, could be permitted. There is nothing, anything ever inherently impure about the pig. That was not the reason that we could not consume it. It is merely that God designated as such, designated that these animals should be forbidden, and that's why they are forbidden. To be sure, this can cause a certain difficulty within Kabbalistic circles. We know the idea that tarfus is metamteh mesalev, that eating non-kosher, according to Kabbalistic views, is something that somehow stuffs up the heart and gets in the way, some say, of emunah. One can see that even by the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe of Yosef Yitzchak, I recall saying that Chal Yisrael, if it is not Chal Yisrael that one consumes, it will affect one's emunah. One can become an apikoros. Somehow there's this idea that, according to them, food does indeed influence the character of the one who consumes it, of the individual Jew. Indeed, the Ramban also puts forth such an idea, who is also a Kabbalist, as we know. But I am suggesting this more according to the rationalist school of thought. The school, especially, as I am saying now, and I will show, of the Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchot Mikvaot, Yud Aleph Yud Bet, says as follows. Davor Barur Galui Shatumot Vataro Gezero Takatuv Hein Ve'ena Midvarim Shedato Shel Adam Mechrato V'harehen Michlal HaChukim. The Rambam says that the idea of purity and impurity is something which is decreed by the text. It's not something that a person can reason out, and they are considered to be within the category of chukim. Deina tvila mina tumot, miklala chukim hi. And so to the immersion, in order to get rid of the impurity, is considered within the category of chukim. Sheina tuma ti totsoa she ta'avur bamayim. Because impurity has nothing to do with dirt or with some type of excrement that is washed away in the water. Alexeira katuvi vadavarta lui bekavanat alev. Rather, it's a decree and it's one's intentions of the heart that determine if one is pure or impure as a result of this immersion. So too, I would suggest that, as I am saying, the Rambam and his philosophy here is applicable to the notion of foods as well, and the impurity that they generate. It is not based on something inherent. It's a gzeiras hakasuv. It is not something ontological that dwells, if you will, within the nature of the food substance or of the animal itself that prohibits it. In his commentary on Shemot Lamed Bet Yud Tet, dealing with why Moshe Rabbeinu shattered the Luchos, says a beautiful explanation that is in keeping with this idea of the Rambam. He says, V'altiv muki amitash v'amishkan heima inyanim kedoshim me'atzma. Even the holy things, much less the things that are impure, Do not think that they have, Meshech Chochma says, any notion of holiness that resides within them inherently. He says, no, that's not true. Hashem Yitbarach Shore B'Tov Banav, God dwells among His people, as we've indicated. It's not that there's inherent holiness in any of these things, that it's ontologically holy. The Yoter Mizeh, he points out, Michtav Elokim, it says the Luchos were considered to be the writing of God. V'gam Heima Inam Kedoshim Be'etzem Rak Bishvilchem. He says they too, even though they had the writing of God on them, these tablets, were also not holy in essence, but only in terms of what their meaning was, what was written on them, and how that would have an effect upon the people. Sof Davari says, Ein Shuminyan Kadosh Ba'olam miyuchas lo ha'avodah v'achnia. V'rak Hashem yiparach shemo hu kadosh b'metziuto ha'michuyevet. It's only the Ribono Shelam, not any object, even the holiest object, we would say even the Torah itself, is not inherently holy. It's only the Ribono Shelam who has inherent holiness within him. And as I'm saying, therefore this idea of Tumah and Tara also, and even the idea of clean and unclean foods, it's a similar idea. There's nothing inherent within them that which puts them into that particular category. This idea that, of course, the Meshech Chochma indicates is why Moshe Rabbeinu broke the tablets in order to teach this lesson to Klal Yisrael is so important. because Devarim Lamed Dalet Yud Bet, very end of the Torah, it says L'chol Ayarach Hazakah L'chol Amara Gadol Asher Asam Moshe L'Einei Kol Yisrael, discusses what was done to the eyes of all of Israel with the strong hand. Says Rashi, Shinasu Libo Lishbor Haluchot Leinehem, that Moshe Rabbeinu made the decision to shatter the tablets in front of them. So you see that Moshe Rabbeinu, we know because the Ribbono Shel Olam told him, Asher Shibarta, Yishar Kochach Asher Shibarta, Rashi goes on, that this was seen as something praiseworthy by Hashem, that Moshe made this decision. And it's the last thought expressed in the entire Torah, as one is leaving it, that one should not make the mistake of the pagans and the religions of old, to think that there is an element of holiness, of goodness, or destructiveness and evil that resides inside either those elements that are holy or those aspects that are not and that are impure. Such would be a return to paganism and contradict and contravene the very idea that Judaism has brought to the world, that it's only the Ribono Shel Olam that has such inherent holiness. A lesson that, as I have indicated, I believe we have learned as well from a proper understanding of the Mamar Chazal that indicates that the pig will one day be permitted, li'atid lavo, as we have understood it within the total context of the dietary laws and the uniqueness of Klal Yisrael in the way in which they have received them.